Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
Hey, it's Rick and Sherry from the Life in a Kilt podcast.
If you are a kilt wearer, a kilt lover, or simply like to gawk, come hang out with us every week on Life in a Kilt podcast.
We discuss kilt life, regular life, and everything in between and underneath.
We've got humor, interviews, sketch comedy, pop culture, beer reviews, even indie music. And we discuss it each week in a way that only we can.
Well, only the way I can.
Oh, hush. I discuss it so much better than
whatever.
You.
Whatever. Anyway, discover the joys of kilt life without ever leaving the comfort of your own headphones. Kilts aren't required. But if you've got one, feel free to buckle up.
That's the Life in a Kilt podcast with Rick and Sherry every week on the ESO Network.
Hello and welcome again to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. I am your host, The Monster. Back to give you another podcast on some sci-fi news. But before I get started, I want to give a quick shout out, because I've been kind of pushing my Facebook page, trying to get more likes. So I'm going to thank the last 10 people that have liked my page. So we have Lorenzo, Gabriel, Marianne, Christine, Clifford, Dave, Brenda, who I work with, Desiree, John, and Jeff. So thank you very much for liking my Facebook page, and hopefully you're listening to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast and enjoying that as well. So please continue to support my efforts to get more likes so I can get more followers to get to advertise on my podcast. So again, thank you very much for that. So a couple of quick tidbit news I want to get into. We have John Cho, who is, if you know him, from Harold and Kumar, and you know him also as Sulu from the latest Star Trek movies. He is joining the cast for season 2 of The Exorcist, which I didn't think it was going to last the whole season, considering what the movie's all about and how the subsequent sequels were just complete garbage. But in any case, now I'm kind of curious to see how that is all going to play out. So again, I'm going to have to put that on my radar and make sure to see if that's something that I will be wanting to watch in the future. Okay, another quick tidbit news is that we have Alan Silvestri, who is replacing John Williams as composer for Ready Player One. And the reason that I first thought when I read this, like, oh, is something wrong health-wise? Because, again, I got into movie scores because of John Williams. And, you know, to me, he was already an old guy when way back in 1977. So I'm just thinking, maybe this is when things are going to be dialed back because, again, of his age or other health-related items. Who knows? But really, it turns out to be just a scheduling thing, because he has another movie called The Papers that he's scoring, in which he's not going to have time to do Ready Player One. But again, it's okay. I'd rather have that than not have John Williams, period. So I'm all right with that. Another quick tidbit news is that Jeremy Renner, who, if you know, he was Hawkeye in the Avengers movies, has accidentally broke both his arms in a stunt, not on the Avengers Infinity movie, but on a movie called Tag. So, who knew that he was Mr. Glass, if you know that reference. But again, it seems to be something that will be quickly mended, so I don't think it's going to be much of an issue, but man, breaking both arms That really sucks, because I know what it's like to have a broken arm, let alone two. So, good luck with you, and Godspeed to get your arms back into Hawkeye proficiency. And a little bit of some sad news here. The wife of Stan Lee had recently passed away. And also, an unbelievable great actor, Nelson Ellis from True Blood, who played the character of Lafayette. And I've only seen the first season, but Lafayette, amazing in True Blood. And I'm surprised at his early age of only 39 that has passed away due to heart complications. I'm not sure what else is going to be revealed down the road, but what a really sad loss to see such a young talent like that happen at his age. Again, if you have not watched True Blood, at least watch the first season and you will understand the magic that Lafayette brings to that series. Truly amazing. All right, so let's get started on the big three topics that I will be talking about. We have some casting news, which we have Randall Park, who is going to be playing a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent on the Ant-Man and Wasp movie. So some good diversity casting news, which is good on that part. I talked about the Saturn Awards, 43rd Saturn Awards back in March. So now we have the results. Did I win big? Did I lose terribly? Just gonna have to wait until I go for the nominations and the winners and losers and see how I did. And lastly, Spider-Man! Ho! I know that's not how you do it, but who cares? I'll be talking about Spider-Man movies. So, from Tobey Maguire, Andrew Garfield, and a little bit of Tom Holland from the Civil War. I'm not going to talk about the Homecoming movie. That'll be on the next podcast. You see how I set it up? So, let's get started on the casting news about Randall Park. So, if you have watched, like I do, a series that's on ABC called Fresh Off the Boat, I love Randall Park. And he was also also on Veep. He was in The Interview. That was that big controversial movie that happened a while ago with Seth Rogen and James Franco. So what I like about the fact that of what he can do is that he is a good talent. And considering how I've talked about in the past with the lack of diversity that Marvel is having, yes, we are getting a Wasp mixed in with Ant-Man for the next sequel. That's perfect. And it was a diverse cast. Michael Peña also was in there, who's Latin, which I love. But adding Randall, I think, adds a bigger problem that we're having. And I bring this up because, not that I've watched the series, but I know of it. CBS had done the remake of Hawaii Five-0, so they've updated that version of that series to past, what, 6-7 seasons or so? And two of those co-stars, the Asian co-stars, left that series after 7 seasons, I believe, because of their pay status. They were not paid as much as their white counterparts. And some could argue, well, they're not necessarily lead stars, but here's that problem. Again, you have to have people of diversity, not because it's required, but it's because you have an audience that is more diverse than it was before. So, considering how you would have a series that takes place in Hawaii, and the majority of the people there, I believe over 52%, more or less, consider themselves having some kind of Asian heritage, you would think it would kind of make sense to have Asian characters, which they did, and now they don't. In the long run, we all benefit from having better entertainment value. So, it makes more sense to do this now than it was maybe 20 years ago, where you would have, you know, a token character. It's something, not great. But then you have the stereotypical, you know, gangster that happens to be Latino or who's black or, you know, or some Asian person that would work like in the Calgon commercials, for example. You know, times have changed and TV and entertainment has to reflect those times. So I just think that it's high time that Marvel adds more diversity to its cast. Because again, and I talked about this in past podcasts, representation does matter. All right, so let me move on to the next topic, and which is the Saturn Awards. Yes, let the music play. Yes, I know it's not the exact music for the Saturn Awards. Nonetheless, let me go over some of the nominations that I picked that I thought would be winners, not losers. Alright, so like as I mentioned before, the whole Saturn Awards is an award ceremony that was in its 43rd year. It's to highlight the best of sci-fi and fantasy, television and film, you know, all the stuff that the Oscars snub, or even MTV think, nah, you guys are way too geeky and nerdy for us. Or Nickelodeon, for that matter, who knows. So we have our own award ceremony. That's great. So let's go over what I thought would be my winners for those categories. Number one, Best Comic to Motion Picture Release. I picked Captain America Civil War. What won was Doctor Strange. I call bullcrap on that. Best Science Fiction Film Release. I picked Arrival, and actually I just checked it out from my library for free. But it did not win. Rogue One, A Star Wars Story won. So I'm not really complaining about that one because, again, it was really, really good. But in my head, I'm trying to think about, like you would in the Oscars, is that you're not necessarily going for the big blockbuster movies. You're going for the more thought-provoking type of films to be a best picture. I wasn't necessarily thinking that Star Wars would be along that line, but hey, it won. Best Fantasy Film Release. I did not see this, but again, thinking along the same lines, what's going to be better in the long run? I picked Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, and The Jungle Book won. That one I have a big problem with, because I saw The Jungle Book and I was really, really disappointed with it. Yes, Jon Favreau did a good job, but a lot of the songs, to me, because I love the Disney version of that movie, the songs is what really stuck with me, and it was completely butchered. It was, especially with King Louie, really sucked. Moving on. Ugh. Number four, Best Horror Film Release. This one I did not pick. Sort of. I mentioned the movie Don't Breathe, because I was familiar with it, but I didn't see it. So I didn't really have a choice. But Don't Breathe actually won for this category, so I gave myself like a half win, half lose. So right now at this point, you know, my batting average is really miserable because I'm on a losing streak. So, number five, I talked about this before, Hidden Figures. Why is this even in this category? It's like The Martian being the best comedy in the Golden Globes. Ridiculous. But I picked it anyway, and it won. See? I know what I'm doing. Number six, Best thriller film release, I picked 10 Cloverfield Lane, and it won. See, I know what I'm talking about. Best actor in a film, I picked Chris Evans, again, for Civil War, and Ryan Reynolds won out. Okay, that's fine. Best actress in a film, I picked Mary Elizabeth Winstead for 10 Cloverfield Lane, who won. Best supporting actor in a film, I picked John Goodman, who won. Best supporting actress in a film, I picked Margot Robbie, who didn't win, but Tilda Swinton won for Doctor Strange. I would have to disagree with that, only because I thought if you look at Harley Quinn and her story throughout the movie, despite however you feel about Suicide Squad, was a much more developed character. So, I was kind of surprised by that, because I would not have thought about Tilda winning, because I didn't thought she was that much of an important character, although, in the context of the story, yes. But performance-wise, no. I could have pushed it all aside. Alright, so after 10 categories, and I'm kind of excluding number 4 because it was kind of like a win-lose, so I gave myself a half point. I have 4 wins versus 5 losses. So, it's not bad. I'm not that bad, but we'll see how it goes. Number 11, best performance by a young actor. I picked Tom Holland for Captain America, and yes, he won, so see. Best film director, I picked Gareth Edwards for Rogue One, who also won. I'm back in business, baby. Best film editing, I picked John Gilroy for Rogue One, and unfortunately, Michael Caine for the BFG guy won that movie for editing. Alright, number 14, best film music. I picked James Newton Howard for Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. Unfortunately, Justin Hurwitz for La La Land. Again, this is not a category that I would put La La Land into a sci-fi fantasy award show. It makes complete no sense to do that. So, that, screw it. Number 15, best film makeup. I opted for Monica Hubert and Don Harlow to make up for their loss to Suicide Squad in the Oscars. And here, they won. So, kudos. Major kudos for them for winning. Number 16, best film special visual effects. I picked John Knoll, and this is for the Rogue One Star Wars story. That also won. Number 17, best animated release. I picked Zootopia, and unfortunately, since I did not see Finding Dory, that stupid movie won. Number 18, best sci-fi television series, I picked Westworld. Number 19, best fantasy television series, I picked Game of Thrones, but lost out to Outlander. Number 20, best horror television series, I picked The Walking Dead, which won. So after 20 nominations or 20 categories, I have now 10 wins and 9 losses. So, getting really better with the win column there. Number 21, best action thriller television series. I picked Mr. Robot, and it lost out to Riverdale. Don't tell my daughter that. She loves Riverdale. I don't. Number 22, best superhero adaptation TV series. I picked The Flash. Supergirl won. So, I'm not that upset. Again, it's still in the CW, DC family. Number 23, best presentation on television. I had picked Mars, which if you have not seen Mars, you can watch it on Hulu or on Discovery Channel, but I love Mars. Unfortunately, 11/22/63, which is the Stephen King, James Franco project. It was really good. I loved the miniseries. I just thought the last half hour of it just kind of fell apart, so I was almost pointless by that time. So it didn't win for me. But in any case, it did win, but I got another loss. Number 24. Best New Media Television Series. Here it was actual tie, but I picked Stranger Things, so that's a win for me. Number 25, Best Actor on a Television Series. I picked Grant Gustin, who was The Flash, Barry Allen, and fortunately, Andrew Lincoln won for The Walking Dead, so can't complain with that. Best Actress on Television, I picked Melissa Benoist for Supergirl, who won. Number 27, Best Supporting Actress on a Television Series. I had picked Melissa McBride and Thandi Newton as my 1 and 2, which can be interchange. Nope. Candace Patton won for The Flash, Iris West. I have issues with her for the past year. I didn't think it was all that great for her to get a nomination. I just don't see her as a strong character, or at least a performance that I'm like, I was wowed by. So I'm not happy about that, but again, it's in the DC CW family, so I really can't complain. Number 28, Best Younger Actor on a Television Series. I picked Millie Brown for Stranger Things, who won. There was no surprise on that. Number 29, Best Guest Performance on a Television Series. This was definitely a no-brainer. Jeffrey Dean Morgan for The Walking Dead. You know is Negan. If you have not watched it, you will be thoroughly impressed with what James brought to his role. Number 30, Best Animated Series or Film on Television. And that was Star Wars Rebels, so no surprise with that. And then I have two more, which I'm not sure why I even bothered, but there is the Best DVD and BD release. And I picked The Lobster, which I didn't see, but I thought, again, more like an artsy film. Tales of Halloween. I have no idea what that is. One. And the Best DVD, BD Special Edition and Release. I picked Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice Ultimate Edition. Again, over 3 hours long. The great scenes that added more filler to really expand upon more about Clark and his investigative role. I thought it made the movie much better. But what did I know? Because Phantasm Remastered was the winner in that category. So, out of the 32 categories that I picked, I have 16 losses, and I have 15 wins. So, not exactly a batting average of 500, but pretty damn close, considering of the multiple categories that you have to pick with multiple nominations. So, not too bad. I really can't complain. There were others that I kind of glanced over because, again, from when I did the podcast back in March, I didn't make any reference to them, so I'm just sticking with what I talked about back then, and as the results, there you have. So, not a bad choice. So, not a bad way to end that segment. So, I'm going to have a special guest to do an introduction for
Spider-Man. Spider-Man does whatever a spider can, spins a web any size, catches thieves just like flies. Look out! Here comes the Spider-Man. Is he strong? Listen, bud, he's got radioactive blood. Can he swing from a thread? Take a look overhead. Hey there. There goes Spider-Man. In the chill of the night. At the scene of a crime. Like a streak of light. He arrives just in time. Spider-Man. Spider-Man. Friendly neighborhood. Spider-Man. A couple more pages. Wealth and fame. He's ignored. Action is his reward. To him, life is a great big bang-up. Wherever there's a hang-up, you'll find the Spider-Man. Hold your applause.
So, we have Spider-Man movies to talk about. If, again, as old as I am, I will be 50 in about a month and a couple of days. But you did get to see a Spider-Man movie on television back in 1977. So definitely, 77 was a very magical year. So that was when I was 10. And we had Nicholas Hammond, who was the Spider-Man. And albeit, you're not dealing with the greatest of special effects, even though you had Star Wars that just came out. Television, not so much. And even before then, you had the Electric Company, who had Spider-Man, who, you know, there's a guy dressed in a suit. That's great. But he didn't really talk, per se. He had word bubbles. And so I like Spider-Man, and I grew up with the animated series, and it'll be years before we actually get Spider-Man and his amazing friends with Iceman and Firestorm. Firestar. Yeah. And I have the t-shirt for that. But, again, I love Spider-Man. So, seeing this on television back in 1977, that 10-year-old boy was ecstatic. Granted, the effects were crappy. The web shooting was okay. But I think what really kind of killed me was that he had to wear a belt. And it's really when he was swinging between buildings that it, like, okay, it's kind of like a harness-ish. You have to put that because you can't, like, you know, now, you know, digitally remove that. So you just have to put that in there. So it was okay for its time. So we had to wait almost a, what, 25 years later? Yeah. We have to wait until 25 years later to actually get an actual Spider-Man movie. So, but even before then, I remember back in the day there was rumors about James Cameron, who was fresh off Terminator 2, and he wanted to do a Spider-Man movie. And that was going to be kind of cool to hear James Cameron, a major director, doing a Spider-Man movie. So he did something called a scriptment, which is kind of a script and a treatment, kind of combined the two. And it's about 57 pages. And it had a couple of different elements, one of them having to do with Electro and Sandman as villains. And the Sandman character, his origin story is kind of similar to what we see in Spider-Man 3. And the other thing is that there was going to be a battle on top of the World Trade Center. Kind of like what Spider-Man 1. There was a shot in a trailer in which you see, I guess, in between the two towers, a big spider web with a helicopter attached to that. But that was removed after September 11th. So unfortunately, that was never seen. And the other thing that was noticed that in the Cameron treatment, there was going to be heavy emphasis. Sorry. Also in the treatment was noted that there was going to be heavy use of profanity and Mary Jane and Spider-Man having sex on the Brooklyn Bridge, which they've been on a Brooklyn Bridge or been on bridges or been on a web somewhere. So, but no sex, per se. I'm not sure if he's into that. But nonetheless, that never happened because of litigation with whoever owned the rights. And I think Carloco, who was the producing company that wanted to do this, went into bankruptcy. So basically, it was just like a lost project. So luckily, we get the 2002 version with Tobey Maguire and Sam Raimi. And we get, to me, and I'm not going to get into spoilers with the newest movie, but to me, and this is very, very similar to watching a James Bond movie. When you watch a Spider-Man movie, however actors portray, that's your Spider-Man, good for good or for bad. So, watching Tobey Maguire, seeing the origin story, having it all play out, just like in the comics, I felt so amazing. Get it? Amazing. Spider-Man. Not spectacular, but amazing. But I really loved his performance. I identified with him so much. And I felt the love that he had for MJ. I really felt that. But jumping forward to the one with Andrew Garfield, which is playing in the background, which you don't hear, but I've been watching it again. The Amazing Spider-Man. Not so amazing. And only because they changed the character from MJ to Gwen Stacy. And it's Andrew Garfield and Emma Stone. So, even though they had a relationship, at the time, I really didn't buy their romance whatsoever. I didn't feel that this was going to be a great movie after I watched this. Like, yay, we got another great actor doing this. I wanted Andrew Garfield to win. I thought he was fantastic in The Social Network. And I thought, oh, Peter Parker and him, definitely, I see it. But honestly, it just did not work for me in that sense. And even though Tom Holland in the Civil War movie of Captain America was hysterical and he had great amount of energy, he's still 14, which is kind of like, again, going back to the comics, but he's really 14. So I find that kind of a little strange. But again, if that's just who you're watching right now, that's your Spider-Man. But again, my Tobey Maguire is my Sean Connery for the Spider-Man movies. So I'm not even going to go back to Nicholas Hammond because it was just a terrible series. But Tobey Maguire, I go back to Tobey Maguire. That movie and Spider-Man 2, I didn't think Spider-Man 2 would be that emotionally amazed. Again with the amazing word. I didn't think I would be so overwhelmed with emotion. The most incredible scene that threw me, and I was not expecting, is the train scene in which Dr. Octopus sent a train basically down the tracks, and it was up to Spider-Man to stop it. And he was shooting his webs, trying to slow down, and he had to wind up being in front of it and holding on to all the webs that he shot out. And you can see the exertion that he's like literally about to break apart. And as he ends that scene and he's successful, his body almost is going to fall off the train, and the people are capturing him, or they're holding him back, and they bring him inside. And it was this beautiful moment that of being taken care of him being gently placed onto the floor, and you know, he didn't have his mask on, and I was like, that could have been my boy. Or it was just such a beautiful moment that I was like, they wanted to take care of him. And when Dr. Octopus appeared, they stood in front, even though it didn't last very long. They stood in front because they were willing to do something for him, because of what he did for them was amazing. So that is a fantastic scene. I can't think of a better moment in Spider-Man than that scene with Dr. Octopus and that fight scene on the train. Oh my god, it's beautiful. That's all I can say. It's a beautiful moment. Now, if we go to 2003? So we're going to 2003, we get Spider-Man's last outing with Tobey Maguire. Not the greatest, but much better, unfortunately, than the Andrew Garfield version. I think the interference by the studio to introduce Venom was a big mistake. Sandman was very compelling, but the retcon of having to be the second gunman or the real gunman that shot Uncle Ben, I think really, really pissed me off. Aside from the emo haircut that Tobey Maguire had to wear. And unfortunately, Kristen Dunst's character of MJ was nothing more than a damsel in distress, which I understand her point completely, because there was just way too much of that going on already. She could have been doing something else more dramatic or something more dire than just being waiting for help or something, you know. So we move on to Andrew Garfield, and you know, the Amazing Spider-Man 2012 was not really all that amazing. Although, in Spider-Man 2, with Electro and the Goblin, I really resented the fact they're doing this movie. Considering how bad the first one was, I never bothered to watch it. The only reason why I even watched it, and this is like on DVD or Blu-ray or whatever, was because of the Hans Zimmer soundtrack. So I actually watched the movie, and that's an interesting score. And then I realized it was Hans Zimmer. And then I'm like, oh, I'm actually liking this movie a lot more. Even though Paul Giamatti as the Rhino at the very beginning and the end, completely wasted as an actor, as a character, as the Rhino, completely wasted. Electro. The music was fantastic, but I never got the arc of why he wanted revenge against Spider-Man and why he thought of him as an enemy, even though as a human character, he was enamored by him. He wanted to be Spider-Man's best friend, that kind of thing. So, and then the Goblin, I'm like, but we saw the Goblin. And that was the whole problem with the Amazing Spider-Man series to begin with, is that you're doing a reboot. When the movie was less than, 3 years? 4 years? Something like that? And you're redoing the whole origin story. That's problematic. Because they didn't do anything new. It wasn't like Aunt May got killed instead of Uncle Ben. No, you didn't do that. It's doing the exact same thing. So it wasn't compelling. It wasn't smart to reboot. You could have done this like you've done with James Bond. Just say, there's your Spider-Man. This is that world. Do something different. You don't have to reset that universe. It just bogged down the whole movie. And honestly, if 2 was the only movie that they did, I would have been okay with 2. As that being that first movie rather than doing their origin story. I didn't care for Sally Field as Aunt May. But, you know, It just never gelled for me, and I'm sure I'm not the only one that feels like that, but it was just terrible. Now, I would say that Garfield does give a little bit more of the snappy dialogue as Spider-Man that I think Tobey Maguire didn't do enough, but that's okay. Everyone has their strengths and weaknesses, but it was just, there was very little to like about Andrew Garfield's performance. And the fact that, and of course, spoiler alert, but Gwen Stacy dies. So I was like, oh, okay, that's good. You know, a dark way. I thought, like, yay, they killed her off. And of course, it's kind of his fault because it's not the snap that did it because of the height. You know, he shoots the web like in the comics, and you hear a quick snap, or at least the comic, the cartoon snap. Because of the webbing, he holds on, or at least the force of shooting going versus the webbing, that's what causes the next snap. But in this case, her head hits the floor and then kind of bounces up, so she dies from that. So, but then he goes in hiding, and then all of a sudden he gets a message from Gwen and everything's right as rain, and then he's back in superhero mode, which I called BS on that. That was just way too much. So, whatever the case is, we then get Tom Holland in the Captain America Civil War movie, which we get Marissa Tomei as Aunt May, Aunt MILF, who is definitely, I think, more MILFy in this movie, coming in the Homecoming movie, than I thought I would be expecting. And that's okay, but that's just my perspective. I think she's a little bit young, but she's also very, you know. All right, so for the bit that I saw, he is fantastic in Civil War and making that reference. Remember that old movie that Wesley's going against Ant-Man, who is now Giant Man? Fantastic. So that is probably the closest that we'll get to an original comic book-ish Peter Parker / Spider-Man movie that is more in line. Now, in this case, Parker, Tom Holland's character, never wore glasses, whereas Tobey Maguire did, kind of like, I guess, like a secret identity thing. And the other thing, let's do some comparison here, is the web shooting. Completely forgot about the web shooting. We have the organic version that Sam Raimi introduced with Tobey Maguire, which, that's kind of interesting. I actually like that. Versus Andrew Garfield, and it didn't seem like as if he created the webbing. Like, he bought it from Oscorp, or Oscorp had the webbing, and he just bought a copy or something like that. And Tom Holland, I think he just uses cartridges, but I'm not sure as to where did he get it. And I'm not even sure. And the movie does address that a bit. And a new movie does address that a bit. So I'm not for or against the organic versus the web cartridges. If you want to be a traditionalist like in the comics, then of course you want to go with the cartridges. But, you know, like many times, Spider-Man always runs out of his webbing at the worst possible time. Which I thought about this morning as I was talking to my wife about the movie. Remember, and this is again, if you're old enough, that if you had the Spider-Man wrist web shooter, it was like a canister or something that you put on your wrist, and then you flip it, and you kind of hit your fingers, your middle fingers, to shoot a web out. And basically, and you just do that and shoot out these fake webs. I miss those toys. I really do. I miss those fun times. So, I'm not pro, or again, as I mentioned, it's not a big deal. But I'm glad for the Tobey Maguire's version. It was kind of cool to see something different. But if you really want to think about it to the most logical endpoint here, is that if he's going to be like a spider, then that's coming out of his ass. And not from his arms or his wrists. So I'm glad they didn't do that, because that would have been a disaster to have Spider-Man shoot a web from his ass. Because he'd be Ass Man or a spider ass man. I don't know. All right. So now that you know who my favorite is, tell me who your favorites are. Do you like Tobey Maguire? Do you like Andrew Garfield? Did you like Tom Holland? Please, I would love to hear your thoughts about that. You can share those details with me on my email. So email me at monstersci-fi show@gmail.com. Follow me on the various social networks. Please, like my Facebook page. I would love to hear from you and stay in touch. So with all that, thank you very much for listening to me and the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast, Sci-Fi from a Certain Point of View. Good night.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at esonetwork.com.